So the text that we are doing today is Manashodham. This is the first one in the series that Swami Tejamayanandaji wrote. Manashodham, Gyanasar, and Dhyanaswarupam. This is the first of the series. What all this is about. As we start our journey, trying to know who we are, and going through this whole series, attending all the lectures and the classes, we ultimately have some idea. What are we talking about? Then what is the problem? As Anilji has mentioned on this on this chart, like, what is our mind? That's the essential topic of this book up here. And what are the impurities? Why don't things stay with us? All the impurities that we have, the anger, greed, lust, passion, attachment, the biggest one of all. And gradually as we go along, how to get rid of them. And the three R's that he talked about, whenever we sit down for something or doing any activity, receiving it, if all the channels are open, all the gates are open, or there's some partially closed, and then keeping it with us, as you know, we don't want to be a porous container with a lot of holes. Things pass out, as they say, you know, in the cup of our hand, due to the space, if we have water or sand, we just lose it. And then the last one is recollection. At the time of crisis, when we actually need it the most, do we remember it or not? That's the whole bottom line again. When we need it, do we have it? And can we use it? So, let's start with the first verse. Paramatma dvayanandaha sarvabhuta sthitopiha ajnanena vratro drashtaha tathaiva cha mano malaiha. So, he is talking about the first Paramatma, the Supreme Self. Again, as I said, listening to all the lectures, doing our reading, doing our reflection, we have some idea of what Paramatma or the Supreme Self is. The Supreme Self, which is not conditioned by any of these. No body, no flesh, no bones, no blood, no mind, no intellect. And then all these things that come after. The gross body that makes us look at things through our sense objects. See, touch, smell, taste. Then we start making our own notions. We become a perceiver. We have emotions. We have thoughts. And that develops the ego. Paramatma, the Supreme Self, is beyond all of that. We all have that. So that's what he is talking about. At least that much we know, that there is something like that. And in our day-to-day life, you know, we all of us, every down to a single microorganism, we are all trying to do something to get happy, to be happy. Every single one of us, with whatever we are doing, we want to be more happier than that. But if we don't have the happiness, we are running after that. But the catch here is, it's dvaya. There is some duality in there. There is some object, and then there is an experiencer who is going to feel or derive happiness out of that object. If we think of something, we have a memory, and then we experience the memory, and then we feel happy about it. We derive an experience out of it. Any relationship, we have a relation, we derive happiness out of it. So there are two things here. One is the object, and then there is an experiencer. So there is dvaya anand, or dual anand. But Paramatma is the non-dual anand. He is by himself, the Supreme Self, which is in fact our swarupa, our own nature, which we don't realize. So that's the first one. Then the second one is sarva bhuta sthito piha, means he is there in all the beings. Everything. He's everywhere. For example, take example of this mic. This mic is probably made of steel. So we say, when we look at this object, we see a mic. We don't see the steel, which actually is giving rise to this mic. What is happening is we are giving attention and importance to the name and the form of this thing, which is a mic. We know there is steel in it, but we see the object. Same thing goes for this cloth. I don't know what fabric is this made of, maybe cotton. We see this piece of cloth, and this is a cloth, but made of cotton. But we see the cloth, but the essence is cotton. Same thing is here. He's in everything, but we see the name and the form. So instead of seeing him, we are seeing the name and the form of that particular object. We know that he is there, but we see the name and the object. Then we go on to the second line. We do that because of ajnanena, the ignorance. Drasht means seen, and adrasht means not being able to see. We are not able to see that because of our ignorance. And then the second word is manomalaihi. Manomal means the impurities that we all have in our mind. So there are two things here. One is the ignorance, and the second is the impurities that we all have in our mind. All these things that we just talked about, the attachments that we have, the anger, the love, passion, greed, all of these things put together are our impurities. Let's say we go to a gathering, and there's somebody we don't like. And we are in the gathering, and that person comes. We are not aware of that person, so we are fine. We are doing, talking to our friends, eating, whatever. But then we see that person, and we want to, like, ignore him, like as if we haven't seen that person, because you know we have a grudge against that person, something. So we are doing that out of either hatred or jealousy or something. So that's the second part. The first part is we were not aware that that person is there. That's the ignorance part. Second part is now we know that he is there, but we are ignoring him out of whatever impurity we have in our mind, the anger or the greed, whatever we have, or the jealousy part. So that's the second part. So that's what he is trying to tell us. The Supreme God, who is everywhere, who we are not able to see and accept because of our ignorance and our impurities. See, ignorance can go away once we do our reading, once we go to a teacher, once we get the knowledge, then we will know that yes, there is something called God or the Creator or the Brahman or the Self, whatever name we want to give him. So there's something like that. So we can get that from the knowledge part. That will happen. As far as the impurities are concerned, they say in the path of devotion, bhakti, devotion, that will go away, the impurities, that is, they will go away with God's grace or the Guru's grace. That will take care of that part. In Vedanta, what we do, we need some self-effort. That is called sadhana. So ignorance, the first part, is taken care of by knowledge, reading, going to the teacher. And then the second, the impurities part, one limb can be taken care of by devotion. And then the second is self-effort / sadhana. Sadhana in terms of doing our prayers, our japas, our upasanas, those kind of things. When we do a prayer, we usually are asking the gods for something, either good health or wealth or a house or a car or something or the other. That's what we usually do when we are praying to the God. What is going to bring purity in the mind is when we drop our identification, this part, and try to merge our individuality with him. When we drop our ego part, and then we offer ourselves to him, the surrendering, That's the trust and the faith we have in that supreme self. And that is the prayer. Somebody says, like, there's a mother and her child is sick and she's praying to God. Why would or should God not listen to her prayer? Let's take an example. There's a farmer and then there's a pot maker. The farmer needs rain for his crops. The pot maker needs sunshine for his pots to dry up. What should God do? Should he listen to the farmer or should he listen to the pot maker? God is going to do what is right. Instead of listening to either of them, whatever is right, that's what he is going to do. That's what is going to happen in the prayer when we drop our identification, when we drop our ego, and when we surrender ourselves to him, then the right thing is going to happen by making us, giving us the knowledge and taking care of the sorrow. That's what we have most of the time. We are unhappy. And that's what we want to get rid of, the unhappiness and the sorrow part. So when we say that Paramatma is there in everything, that means like in this, the whole essence is the cotton. In this, the whole essence is the steel. That means that's all there is. There is steel. So in every being, in every place, wherever he is, that's what it is. There's no I. There's no mind. That's all there is. That's all there is. It's cotton. We have just given a name to a kurta or a cloth, piece of cloth. But what is there? It's all cotton. So the essence is only God. But we think, because of our ego part, that there is an I, and there is, since there is an I, there is a mind, and then I am the doer, and then since I do, I enjoy. And this creates the whole problem for us. So there is no I, no mind, and there's just one supreme bliss. And when we know this, then we not only make the life happy for ourselves, but for others as well. Otherwise, we inflict misery for ourselves and for others. What he just read in the office. So if we are inflicting misery not only on ourselves, but onto the others as well. So that's what he is trying to tell up, say here. It's the ignorance and the impurities that we have in our mind that make us not see God everywhere. And as we discussed in the Sunday class, all the time, everywhere, in all the beings. So that's the first verse. We can talk about it. If any comments, any questions?
And to see ourselves as almost completely
different. The beauty of this Advaita Vedanta, because there are Dvaita Vedanta. The beauty of this is, at the end of the day, the Advaita Vedanta is going to accommodate everybody. They're not going to say no to anybody. Okay, you are also right. You're also right. You're also right. At least that way, somebody is trying to, or everybody is trying to reach him. So they're not going to say no to anybody. But this knowledge that, you know, it's called Shruti Pramana or the Shabda Pramana. You know, all the rishis in the mountains, during their deep meditation in their caves, deep when they absorbed, merged with the self, the knowledge that they got, and when they chanted that knowledge, all that knowledge got passed down to their disciples, and from them, disciples, and ultimately it got written down in the form of the text and everything. So it's like this. It's not, nobody sat down and wrote. Ved Vyasaji, who wrote the Bhagavad Gita and the other texts as well, he was the one who compiled everything together and did the four Vedas and then the Bhagavatam and the Gita and everything. So he was the one who compiled everything and brought it together. Before that, it was all scattered. So it is Shruti Pramana based on hearing what the rishis heard or got when they were deep in their meditation, and that knowledge came down. That's what's called as Guru Shishya Parampara. That's what it is, Guruji, Gurudev, then Guruji, and then all of our teachers. So that's how it all came down. And once we think, or once we have this understanding that this is very, very difficult, then we may as well just fold our books and walk away. But they don't want us to do that. The whole idea that we are here is we have done something and we are worthy of it. That's why we are here. And this will continue. If, strictly speaking, you know, it is basically just our ignorance to say that if not in this life, maybe in next life, or maybe in next life, or maybe in some life. But the moment we start talking in those terms, then we start giving reality to this complex. And the whole idea of Vedanta is, if in one liner, all the studies put together, all the volumes of the scriptures put together, if somebody asks, what is the essence of Vedanta, tell me in one line. That one line is, I alone am Brahman, entire Jagat Karan, or the entire reason for the entire universe. That's it. That's the essence of the teaching of Vedanta. I am Brahman, the Jagat Karan. That's it. That's the teaching of Vedanta in one line. So, when that happens, that means that there's just one supreme reality that we can call that Om, or Brahman, or Self, or God, or Creator. But then that is the only thing. There's nothing else. We, in the beginning of our reading, our text, something like this, to help us understand and climb up the ladder, we have to understand this. And once we move beyond this ladder, we get up there. And then we realize there was nothing ever at all anyway. We talk about, we need the freedom. We need moksha. I want freedom from our bondage. We talk like that because we think that we are bound. We think we are ignorant. But in reality, we are free as it is, as we are right now. Again, we did this in the Sunday class. Arjuna asked, and he saw God as pervading the entire space in all the directions everywhere. That means the God is there, but through our imaginations, using our senses, which are extrovert, they are designed to go outwards. Our eyes are designed to look outwards. Our ears are designed to listen to things. So any extroverted perception is not going to tell us what is inside us. For that, we have to turn our gaze inwards. It's called aparoksh. To simplify, there are three things. One is pratyaksh, or direct perception. I see you, you see me. That is direct perception. And then the second is indirect perception. We see fire on the mountain. So there must be some fire on the mountain somewhere because we see the smoke. If the patio is wet, then it must have rained. So that's the second one. And then because that's again, we are making an anuman or a guess. The third thing is called aparoksh, where we derive our knowledge or get our knowledge without using these five senses. Touch, taste, smell, hear, and speak. All these five, shabda, rasa, rupa, gandha, sparsh, we are not using them. We cannot get here by these five sense organs. To get there, this is not going to take us there. To get to that, we have to lose this. We have to go backwards inside and feel our presence inside. That's what the scriptures are about. And that we will get that by slowly, slowly reading. Again, teachers, once we have that, then that is going to give us the knowledge. We're all studying, and it's not an easy task, as you mentioned. But I don't think it's undoable, because it has been done by so many, and that's how come we have so many teachers. and so many books are there, so much material is there. That means there is some truth to that. Because we know that this is not me. Anything that belongs to me is not me. How can this be me? Because we know that, we talked about, like when we were young, we know that we were young. And then as we got older and older, we knew that we got older. But so that entity is still there. But as when we combine that consciousness with our intellect, that becomes the intelligence. And that complex gives us the feeling of, I am the doer and I am the enjoyer. These two guys always walk together. The consciousness, the reflected consciousness, not the supreme consciousness, the reflection of the consciousness and the intellect. That becomes the intelligence. And these guys walk together under one umbrella when it's raining. It should be only one person, but they walk together. And that gives us the idea that, okay, ego, I am the doer, I am the enjoyer. And then we perceive through our these sense organs, eyes, ears, we perceive objects. And that becomes our world. So as long as we see, perceive through our sense organs, the objects, we will give reality to that. Because we think that, okay, well, this, I see this. How come this is unreal? I see it. Well, the whole reason we see it, that's why it's unreal. Because we are seeing it through our sense objects. Like when we sleep, the world is not available to us. If world was real, it would be available to us all the time. It's not. Our ego is in suspension in our sleep. We sleep good. We know that. So who was that who knew that we slept well? Because at that time, that complex is not there. So that entity that is there during our waking time, through which that supreme the consciousness, the reflected consciousness, using our intellect, becoming intelligence, then through our sense organs, going extrovert, then giving reality to all these things that we perceive, which is the world. Because the world is nothing but a combination of these objects. What do we call world? This is world. So as long as we see these objects through our sense organs, we are going to give reality to that. And then we get trapped in this.
Separate this and then kind of go into a meditation mode. This is awakening, try to focus and focus, and it seems to be working.
Well, I'm glad. I think that's the key. Once we hone down to the problem, that what is creating the problem, which is our ego, it does not let us do things. It creates problem back. It's a very smart fellow. This guy is with us all the time. That's what ego is. The individuality that we have is what is called a jiva / ego. These guys are all same names to different, all of these entities. And this ego / individuality, this jiva, will create all sort of problems for us. He will not leave us. Because, you know, he knows the moment, you know, we come in this hall, he has to wait outside. So he's waiting for outside. I always remember this. And as soon as we put our shoes, he's back with us. Okay, I have to do that. I have to go home. I have to buy that. Tomorrow morning, what is going to happen? Ego is coming into play. The interaction that we have to do. So as constantly doing the reflection, that as you said, that I am that, I am not this, and having the attitude of a witness, I think that's the key, as you said, which takes time. Slowly, 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 it happens. There's no shortcut in this. If somebody has studied a lot or done a lot, then like our teachers, you know, in young age, like our Guruji, Swami Tejamayananji, he was in his 20s, I think Anilji mentioned, and he was in Bhopal. That's where I come from. In 1983, in Bhopal, Union Carbide leak killed about 10,000 people. I was there at that time. I was there, and I was doing my pre-med studies at that time, and I was not in medical school at that time. So I was going to the college on my bicycle. It's a hilly city. So when I was going on the slope, like we see Bakersfield when we come down from the Grapevine, we see the smog. Same thing, I saw black layer on the city. I had no idea. I drove, rode down to the college, and not a single soul was there in the entire college. It was early in the morning, like close to 7:15 or so. My home was far. And there was a professor, he came, "Oh, you don't know this, this has happened, blah, blah, blah." So then I went home, and then when I read the news, but that's one thing. So in Bhopal, Guruji, he was studying, I think, engineering or something like that. And Gurudev was doing his, giving his discourse. So there was a big hall, tent, and then he was doing the talk. And we have Sharda Amma, she is the head of Ann Arbor, Michigan chapter, and she was chanting in Bhopal. So he was, you know, in India, they have those black bikes, big ones, Atlas and, you know, Hero bike. And he was going on that, and he's a short person, Guruji. So, and then when he heard him, he stopped, and he was at the back. That was the first time he heard him. And then the second day, he was in the front. And he was in his 20s. So, for somebody to come across this thing, he must have done a lot of studies, a lot of things in his previous life. He was there the second day in the front. In that age, to come to this, when a lot of us are having different experiences in our life, many of us have relationships, giving up, just a hypothetical thing, giving up your sweetheart of school or college and come to this, is a great, great thing. So, for somebody to do that kind of thing in their young age, or as early in their life, is a big thing. Then it happens slowly. Now we have come here, so I think we will take, we'll continue.
What I understand, sadhana is a technique to purify your mind. And then bhakti is an operation.
Bhakti is just devotion. Sadhana is our effort in the form of doing our prayers, doing our mantras, you know, trying to purify our mind, so that we can be totally devoted, have the entire this idea of total devotion, that we have surrendered ourselves, we have become one with them. So these are the means to come to that level, so that we are giving ourselves to Him.
So before bhakti comes sadhana.
Yeah, we have to do our sadhana so that we can be complete devotee. At least that's my understanding. But if please feel free to pitch in. Right. I think we discussed this thing. This is again just to help us understand that this is the heart and He is here. But logically, He cannot be here, because when He is here, that means we are giving Him support. He is in our body. He cannot be here. We cannot support God in our heart. It's the other way around. We are supported by Him, but just to help us understand, He's saying that He is in our heart. Because whenever something happens, we always do that. God is here, or, you know, our beloved is here, or our parents are here. So we always do this gesture. So that's what, to help us understand this idea that He is in all of us. That's the only thing that they are doing. It doesn't literally mean that He's in the heart. It's just the knowledge that we need to know. So He's not sitting here in this it's called masapind, this heart. In Vedantic language, Sanskrit, it's called masapind, a ball of flesh. So He's not actually sitting here in this ball of flesh.
What about the idea of the spirit being in us?
I think we are in the spirit. Spirit is everywhere. But I think these are some, these may be some controversial points of discussions. You know, the Holy Spirit. I mean, I'm totally ignorant about that aspect. So I cannot, I'm not the right person to comment. I think Dr. Berry is the right person to answer that question. But I think as far as the knowledge part is concerned, I mean, that's what they're trying to tell us, that we all have that. Not literally sitting in this place, but just to help us understand that we have it. Because without that consciousness, what is making us move or talk or speak or see? There has to be something. And he cannot be tiny, tiny thing sitting here. How can it be a tiny thing sitting here? Like a small light or a small bulb. It cannot be that. In that case, like a bigger the person is, the bigger that light is. Like an ant has a small microscopic thing and an elephant has bigger than us. It cannot be like that. When we do that, we are again giving reality to this complex. That this consciousness which is reflected through our ego, we are going through our sense organs and we are giving reality to all of that. You don't want to get caught in that. Because this has no shape or form, and we'll try to meditate on that today. If we give a shape and form, then we are limiting that thing. And that can, the self cannot be limited. It is limitless.